Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And I enjoy enormously taking such tours with my friend and colleague from the Center for Security Policy, our executive vice president there, and former member of Congress, and star of stage and screen and talk radio, Fred Grandy. Fred, lot to talk about this week, as usual, but a particular drama has been what has happened of late with the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, in connection with his effort to, it seems, position himself and his team in the negotiations with the president on the so-called fiscal cliff, only to be humiliated, I guess is the right word for it, by his own folks. Tell us what happened, both the idea that John Boehner had and then what came of it.
Well, I've drawn two conclusions. One surprised me, the other didn't. The one that didn't surprise me, in my alleged days as a star of screen and TV, I remember an expression I heard from an old veteran that said, be nice to people on the way up because you'll see them on the way down. Boehner hurt himself badly by throwing those four conservatives off committees. And the ripple effect, I think, cost him some key votes when he was trying to get the plan B, which was to raise taxes on millionaires through the House with his own Republican.
Now, remind us about that, Fred, because I think for most people that was pretty much inside baseball. The four conservatives were thrown off of these committees, I think, as I recall, principally in connection with finance and therefore
budget
issues.
Well, finance, one of them was even on the agriculture committee. Why he got dumped from his wheat subcommittee, I don't know, but it left a lot of bad blood. And they had been, to some degree, contrarian in the caucus. They had wanted more cuts. They had wanted more fiscal responsibility than the sheet leadership was prepared to give, and he made an example of them. But when he needed them, naturally they weren't there, and a lot of people who sympathized with them weren't there either. So that didn't surprise me, because obviously on the way down he saw those people and they were waiting for him. But what did surprise me, and this is something I don't understand with a guy who has as much power in a political organization like a Congress as the Speaker, why you would even put a vote out there and announce you were going to do it without first having the votes in hand is a mystery I will never understand. That is legislating 101, Frank. And particularly if you wield a gavel as powerful as the Speaker of the House, if you don't have your own guys absolutely in lockstep, don't even go there. And what he has done now is so badly compromise himself, I think the president is probably just saying it's a walk for the rest of for these discussions.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. And not least for the purposes of this program and its focus, that has very profound implications, of course, for the sequestration of funds for the Defense Department, some $500 billion cuts in the defense resources over 10 years' time.
Well, that brings up another strategic point that still mystifies me regarding the speaker's ongoing discussions and debate with the White House. The first bill that was presented was essentially a plan that the Republican caucus has had in place since last spring that was designed to fix the sequestration problem. They were going to take those cuts out of domestic and entitlement spending. And that passed the House, obviously on a straight party line vote. It'll go nowhere in the Senate, but that was the original Republican line in the sand. I don't understand why that still isn't the Republican line in the sand. I don't understand why the Speaker, after the election, regardless of the outcome, didn't say, this is our offer, Mr. President. If you've got something better, send something to us. But John Boehner has been negotiating with himself for the last 6 weeks.
One other interesting bit of perhaps inside baseball for folks listening is that Grover Norquist, a man we have talked about from time to time here because of his active help to the Islamists through an Islamist Muslim Brotherhood, for that matter, front organization that he created some years ago called the Islamic Free Market Institute, threw his weight behind this Plan B, only to be repudiated by some 26 conservative organizations by name and quite forcefully. It was really quite a dramatic turn of events, Fred Grandy, and I have the feeling that it may be a further indication that people inside the conservative movement, as well as the Republican Party on the Hill, are no longer going to be intimidated, as they have to this point, by Grover Norquist and his various minions.
Well, I think if I understand what his rationale was, as a guy who obviously has been championing the no-tax pledge ever since even I was a member of Congress back in 1986, his rationale was taxes are going to go up anyway, so it's not really a tax increase, because what the speaker is trying to do is at least hold the line for people below $1 million. Now, obviously, that didn't hold sway with a lot of conservative groups and Tea Party groups. And what it indicates, and this is really unfortunate, Frank, is a fracture in the Republican conservative alliance that the president and his party will exploit for as long as they have that opportunity. So one of the things that I don't understand either about the speaker or about Grover is why they have all of these fights in public. If there was ever a time to not call plays once you get out of the huddle, it's now.
Yeah, no question. Fred, speaking of trying to understand what's going on the field, there has been this week, of course, the release of the so-called Accountability Review Board. It was presented by its authors, principal authors, former Ambassador Tom Pickering and former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mike Mullen, to seemingly rather skeptical panels on both sides of the Hill. What's your take on the review board's findings and how it has been welcomed?
Well, when in doubt, use the vernacular of obfuscation. Terms like systemic failure and management deficits, as opposed to blowing the whistle on the people that probably are responsible. And of course, the heads that rolled, people like Charlene Lamb and some of the other mid-level people who were the first up to testify, were probably thrown under the bus weeks ago and told that they were on their way out. But this the only thing this really tells us, I think, Frank, is we need that kind of Watergate committee that people like Congressman Frank Wolf have been proposing, so we can actually have a deep investigation, debate, and discussion about this. And, you know, once the Secretary of State is over her diplomatic illness, which is the way John Bolton described it, we're going to get some answers. But now, essentially, the White House has essentially said, well, it's game over. If the Republicans allow this to happen, that once again, I think, is an example of their inability to marshal their forces at a time when we need them more than ever.
Yeah, you know, Diana West was on the show this week and mentioned, as she is wont to do, a point that I had forgotten. Bill Safire, the famous both public servant and then New York Times conservative, described Hillary Clinton once upon a time as a, quote, congenital liar, unquote.
I remember that.
John Bolton was rather more diplomatic by describing her as having succumbed to the diplomatic illness. But Fred, her absence this week was striking, and we're being told that she is going to be testifying at some point next month in the context of larger foreign policy stuff. But what does it mean, in your estimation, that the Secretary of State has essentially ducked and covered in this instance?
Well, not only the present Secretary of State, but if you believe John Kerry is the future Secretary of State, you've got a coalition of outgoing and incoming that are essentially saying the same thing, which is nothing. If you looked at what Kerry, who currently chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said during these so-called hearings or presentation by the Accountability Review Board, he didn't even ask questions. He made some presentation about how the State Department needs more money and then yielded his time. Here's what bothers me. As much as I repudiate just about everything this administration stands for and their coalition of support in the House and the Senate, where they control, obviously, the majority, they know how to stick together as a team. And unfortunately, That is helping them right now and obscuring the truth, which is why I think the Republicans have to be insistent to the point of being obnoxious and getting this committee to drill further down. This is the Speaker's choice. This is absolutely John Boehner's decision on this Watergate committee. If he says no, it won't happen.
We have to leave it at that. Fred Grandy, thank you for joining us as always. It's great to talk with you. Have a great holiday, and we'll visit with you on the other side. And next up, we'll visit with Fred Flights of the Langley Intelligence Group Network about this Accountability Review Board, what it found and what it seemed to miss. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, that adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
Be your best friend for life.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, the Threat to America at amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying we're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC, New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights. He is the managing editor of the terrific new resource, Langley Intelligence Group Network. Its products are to be found at lignet.com. Fred is, of course, a career intelligence professional, having served for many years at the CIA, as well as in the State Department and up on Capitol Hill with the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And Fred, you have a number of interesting things that you are reporting on. Let's start with something we talked about a moment ago with Fred Grandy, but I'd really like to get your perspective as an intelligence professional on this so-called Accountability Review Board report on what happened in the run-up to, during, and after the attack on our diplomatic missions, as they're now being called, in Benghazi, Libya on September 11th.
Oh, thanks, Frank. It's good to be here. Well, this report has made a lot of news in Washington this week, and the press is crediting it for saying that there were systemic failures at the State Department in terms of
security procedure. Some people in the Diplomatic Security Bureau had been forced out. There were some significant findings that there was no protest outside the consulate, which we had known, as the Obama official said this earlier. But there's some real problems with this report, and some of this came out yesterday. First of all, there's a general approach that Al-Qaeda has been defeated, and there were sort of hard-to-understand Al-Qaeda elements that may have been involved in the attack. I think this was really unfortunate. It sort of played down what was really at stake here. It sort of gives senior State Department officials a pass who really should have known better about what was going on in the situation. Although Susan Rice, who claimed that there were demonstrations in advance and there was inadequate intelligence, said this on television. She is not mentioned. It says that although there was inadequate warning about the attack, it also says that there were a substantial number of incidents. It actually lists 20 specific security incidents, very serious one in Benghazi in 2012, including IEDs, RPGs, gunfire at diplomatic personnel, an attack on the British, a motorcade of the British ambassador in Benghazi that forced the British consul to close in June. This is all evidence that the State Department should have known better. And I give them credit for that. But I am concerned that they don't call for anyone to be replaced. They don't call for disciplinary action to be taken. And high-level officials are not held accountable.
Fred Frites, again, you have served in senior positions and the Department of State, working with then Undersecretary of State John Bolton. Is it conceivable, based on your experience, both of course as a guy in the intelligence community and in that job, that the Secretary of State would have been so clueless about what was going on as to not warrant mention? You mentioned that Susan Rice wasn't referred to in this report. Apparently, neither was Secretary of State Clinton, and that we're seeing what my friend Diana West calls not simply a whitewash, but a white out of people who were almost certainly in a position to have some awareness of what was going on, and especially as this lie was being promoted, that this was all about a mob and a response to a video, they seem to be not being held accountable at all.
I think that's right. And in fact, there's two areas. We want to talk about that and the fact that they try to blame inadequate resources. And this happened with the 9/11 Commission. There was no one held personally responsible. Someone was responsible for what happened in the Benghazi consulate. Now, four lower-level officials were forced out. But high-level officials like Hillary Clinton and apparently Ambassador Susan Rice have access to the president's daily brief from the intelligence community. They get very good intelligence on what's going on. This administration has long been loath to use the word terrorism or to admit that global terrorism is a problem. It's still hard to see them use the word terrorism in their lexicon. And it was pretty clear after this attack took place, they had no intention of using that term. Some of that was presidential politics, but a lot of it is simply the philosophy of the administration. But let's talk about another very troubling thing, and that's resources. And this is interesting because of John Kerry, who also was trying to say that one reason for this is inadequate resourcing. That is, the Republican Congress won't give adequate resourcing to the State Department for Security. That is absolute nonsense. The fact is mismanagement of State Department resources. I've worked there for several years. During the first set of hearings in September, state officials did not say resources was an issue. And the fact that there are people, Senator Menendez is also trying to claim this, that if only Congress gave the State Department more money, this might not have happened. This is just an outrageous thing to assert. And I think it's something that people who care about this have to really protest.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I hope that's what we'll be seeing more of in the weeks ahead. Fred Flights, let me switch gears here. You have at lignet.com a very interesting interview with a good friend of ours and a much admired colleague, Waleed Fares, about what's happening in Egypt at the moment. We've had half of the referendum on the Constitution already in the can, as they say. There's another vote taking place momentarily on the other half, I guess, of the various areas of Egypt that weren't polled. What do you expect? What does Waleed Faris tell you we should expect is coming?
Well, Dr. Faris gave a very good interview to Lignet. I hope your listeners will be able to catch it on our site, lignet.com. He says that this process to get a new Egyptian constitution that was written entirely by the Islamists is part of a long march by the Muslim Brotherhood to convert Egypt into an Islamist state. And his concern is that the Muslim Brotherhood is taking a very deliberate and cautious strategy of getting themselves into power. Once they're into power, they're going to start taking down the country's democratic institutions to establish an Islamist state.
Well, this is not entirely a surprise, but it's not a cheery prospect. And the fact that we have helped enable this is going to be, I fear, a terrible, terrible mistake and a costly one at that. Fred Flights, speaking of changes, one of the things that seems in the offing is a changing of the guard in Cuba. You also had an interview with another good friend of ours, Ambassador Otto Reich, formerly an Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, about who may have called the shots on the selection of a successor and the one in particular that may replace Hugo Chavez, perhaps in the very near future. Tell us about that.
Well, we spoke to Ambassador Reich, who said that it's very clear that Hugo Chavez chose his vice president, Mr. Maduro, to be a successor because he is the most strongly pro-Cuba member of his inner circle. And the reason for this is that Cuba is dependent on enormous subsidies from Venezuela in terms of oil, about 100,000 barrels of oil a day for its economy to survive. There are numerous indications and photographs and press reports of the close relationship between the Castro brothers and Chavez, and Cuba is desperate to maintain this relationship if Chavez passes away. He just underwent his fourth cancer operation. It's believed that he's probably terminally ill. There's talk right now about possibly postponing the January 10 inauguration for Chavez because he's recuperating from this rather serious operation in Havana, so we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. Finally, Fred, we've just got a minute, but very quickly, developments in Northern Ireland seem to bode ill for the peace there. Tell us what's happening.
It's an interesting situation. Recently, the Northern Ireland government decided that they would no longer fly the Union Jack every day of the year, only on special occasions like the Queen's birthday. This has led to an upsurge in violence, attacks on police and security forces, buildings being attacked with firebombs. It is very, very troubling because there's also a small but resurgent effort by former IRA people in Northern Ireland. And this is severely hurting the economy, and it's creating real headaches to try to figure out how to tamp this down and prevent a resurgence of sectarian violence.
Well, this is very much to be hoped for, but I fear that, as is often the case, having not finished off the IRA, that we will find them back at the throats of those who are opposing them. Fred Flights, thank you so much for joining us. As always, thanks for the great work you do at lignet.com. Keep it up and come back to us again very soon. In the meantime, I hope you have good holidays, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Next up, we will talk with David Brog of Christians United for Israel about Twitter for terrorists. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Songer.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit cards.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. With efforts to avert the so-called fiscal cliff collapsing, the Pentagon faces an imminent catastrophe. For months, its senior civilian and military leaders have warned that the effect of a further $500 billion in spending cuts on top of roughly $800 billion already eliminated or in the works will be disastrous for America's military and security. Yesterday, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta announced that massive government layoffs may not occur immediately, but could be forthcoming. He promised that if that happens, advance notice will be given. Unfortunately, the industrial base underpinning our armed forces has already begun what may be 1 million such layoffs, and Team Obama's pre-election machinations kept most of those employees from getting the warnings required by law. Consequently, sequestration will harm our economy and devastate the common defense. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at SecureFreedomRadio.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We have a very special treat in the nature of a holiday gift, I like to think. David Brog, the Executive Director of Christians United for Israel, is with us to talk about several issues that are of concern to all of us who love Israel, and for that matter, who are concerned about our own security. David is the author, among other things, of In Defense of Faith, The Judeo-Christian Idea, and The Struggle for Humanity. His writings and those of Pastor John Hagee and others associated with this marvelous organization, KUFI, as it's known, can be found at kufi.org. And David, welcome. It's always great to have you with us, especially at a time when there's so much going on that bears on these questions. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, good. Listen, you've written powerfully in Roll Call recently about what I think of as kind of Twitter for terrorists. Tell us what's going on with respect to the use being made by jihadists of our social networking systems.
Well, you know, Israel recently had to go back into Gaza for a brief period. Over 800 missiles had been fired from Gaza into Israel in 2012, and Israel finally reluctantly decided to go fight it. During that campaign, there were articles about how Hamas was beating Israel in the quote-unquote Twitter wars. And it was amazing to see that Hamas had such a sophisticated and forceful presence on Twitter. But then we looked at each other and said, wait a minute, on what basis do they get a Twitter account? You know, and this goes to really the core of
this
our...
This is, after all, a designated terrorist organization, Hamas.
That's exactly right. And this gets to the core of our battle, which is there is a bright red line between those who use legitimate means to further their political will and desires and those who cross the line into targeting innocent civilians for death, who are terrorists and have to be shunned by all decent human beings. Hamas has clearly crossed that line. Hamas is a terrorist organization that targets Israeli civilians and American civilians. They have American blood on their hands. Because of that, our government has designated them as a terrorist organization. And under United States law, you're not allowed to give communications equipment or material support of any kind to a terrorist organization. So what we're talking about here with Twitter is not just a moral failure. It happens to be a legal failure. And by the way, for those who think that the material support to terrorism that is forbidden under our law is only support that helps you blow up buses or human beings, you know, giving a bomb or giving a gun, they need to read the United States Supreme Court's opinion in Holder v. Humanitarian Law Project, a 2010 opinion, which was a wise opinion, made it clear, money is fungible. If you help a terrorist organization in any way, the benefit they derive from your help can then be used into buying guns or bombs. You just can't. Once you cross the line into targeting innocent human beings for death, you are an outlaw and you don't deserve this kind of help. So Twitter is failing morally, and they're violating United States law.
Well, this is a part of a larger problem, of course, which is this phenomenon of material support for terrorism. And I'm quite concerned, as I imagine you are, David, that in many respects we are not adequately prosecuting that at a moment when more and more people are finding ways like this to advance their purposes. This calls to mind the recent revelations that the Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of a terrorist state, the Islamic Republic of Iran, now has his own Facebook page. The question occurs, is that a similar violation, would you say, of American law?
Well, I think the Iran's Revolutionary Guard, have they been designated, Frank?
I believe they have.
Yeah, in which case you've got another violation. And again, it's a violation of law. And also, look at the moral statement. When you get a Twitter account just like everyone else, when you get a Facebook page just like everyone else, it's making a statement that is dangerous, which is you're a legitimate part of this debate. You know, I point out in my op-ed, if the Mexican drug cartels were using Twitter or Facebook to brag about their latest round of beheadings, they'd be shut down. They're criminals, they'd be shut down. You know, if a pedophile took to Facebook or Twitter to brag about his latest conquest, he'd be shut down. Why do we make an exception for murderers who claim a political motive? And by the way, for everyone worried about freedom of speech, I just want to stress, if you're a supporter of Hamas or the Ayatollahs and you want to voice your opinion on Twitter or Facebook, that's fine. You're protected by the First Amendment. That only your right to voice support for these terrorists ends when you are the terrorist. When you are the organization spilling blood, at that point, you can't get this kind of help. You can't be given this kind of benefit. You can't be given this kind of publicity.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that you've brought this to everybody's attention, David Braga. I hope that this will begin a distinct effort on the part of our government, and if not on the part of our citizens, to ensure that these social networking organizations are not providing what amounts to, as you say, material support for terrorists. Israel is very much on our minds at this moment, David Braga, as I know it is for you as the executive director of Christians United for Israel. Talk to me about what's happening in the neighborhood, specifically what you make of developments in Egypt at the moment. We were talking earlier about the Sharia constitution coming down with Fred Flights. And what do you make of the idea that the Obama administration apparently has of providing another squadron of F-16 aircraft and perhaps as many as 200 more main battle tanks, the best we have, to this Egyptian regime?
You know, the idea of arming this anti-Israel and anti-American regime further makes absolutely no sense. You know, when it comes to our economic aid to Egypt, I'm not comfortable with it, but there's an argument to be made. Hey, we help feed them. We help win support from the Muslim Brotherhood-controlled government. We help moderate that government. I don't buy it, but at least there's an argument to be made. I can't imagine. What is the argument to be made for arming them? Who's threatening them?
Yeah, I can't figure it either, especially since it seems as though, especially given what the Muslim Brotherhood's attitude is towards Israel, that these can only be used at some point, if not in the very near future, down the road against Israel.
Yeah, you know, Frank, you warned, and a lot of us warned against this Arab Spring and didn't buy into the hype or the enthusiasm. And sometimes you pray not to be right, but I fear our concerns have only been vindicated with time.
Yeah, the nice thing about being kind of a worst-case type is that you're always happy to be wrong, and I really wish we had been on this. Hey, before we let you go, David Brog, you served in senior positions in the United States Senate, I believe, under both Senator Arlen Specter and as staff director of the Senate Judiciary Committee during a period when a fellow by the name of Chuck Hagel was in the Senate. He is apparently still being considered, despite rising opposition to his nomination by President Obama to be the next Secretary of Defense. What are your thoughts on his nomination? Should it come?
I'm deeply troubled by the potential nomination, and here's why. And again, it would be a disaster for Israel. But even putting Israel aside, if you have eyes, if you read the newspaper, the number one strategic threat to the United States of America today is an ascendant and potentially nuclear Iran. Yet Chuck Hagel has demonstrated a consistent blind spot towards this threat. He repeatedly opposed economic sanctions on Iran designed to stop their nuclear program when he was in the Senate. He opposed recognizing Iran's Revolutionary Guard, which we discussed before, as a terrorist organization. And then he did not participate in a letter to our European allies saying, please recognize Hezbollah as a terrorist organization.
An Iranian proxy that is used precisely for that purpose.
The number one Iranian puppet. And so again, this consistent blind spot to the number one threat to our security, to me, makes him ineligible for the job. And I say that as someone who respects Chuck Hagel. He's an intelligent guy. He served our country in Vietnam bravely. He sacrificed for this country. What he did in the past for this country, I admire. I'm just afraid of how he would endanger this country in the future when he can't recognize this kind of a threat.
Well said. David Brog, we have to let you go. This is most important and most timely. I hope everyone, in particular President Obama, will take to heart this admonition and that we will be spared this very problematic nomination. David Brog, thank you very much for joining us. Good holidays to you. I hope you'll come back to us in the new year early and often, and stay safe and keep Israel safe in the meantime.
Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners, Frank.
Next up, we'll be speaking with Bill Gertz, taking our tour inside the ring at the end of 2012. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the Southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express traveler's checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express travel service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of 3 children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a 5th grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a 5-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to the Gospel.
I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Bill Gertz. He is the guy we have turned to throughout 2012. To give us a guided tour inside the ring. The title of course, his internationally renowned column at the Washington Times. He is also a senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, the author of 6 superb books, including The Failure Factory, and a man who we look to for much counsel about what is coming up in 2013 with respect to the national security. Bill Gertz, welcome. It's always great to have you with us.
Hi, good to be on the program.
Let's talk a little bit about a memo that Leon Panetta, the outgoing Secretary of Defense, has sent to his minions about the prospect of layoffs as a result of going off the fiscal cliff and sequestration kicking in. What's the word on that?
Yes, Defense Secretary Panetta sent out a memorandum to all Defense Department employees on a Thursday evening. And in it, he talked about this. Basically, we should be able to get over this fiscal cliff and prevent the coming sequestration, which is the $660 billion defense cut. However, he also opened the door to possible furloughs of Pentagon employees. Now, it also made the point that military personnel are exempted from sequestration, which is also complicating the ability to find ways to cut the, or make a more responsible reduction in spending. But this is the first reference that the Pentagon is getting ready for this coming disaster on defense spending.
Yeah, and I guess this contrasts, Bill Gertz, with the notice that has not been given to those in the defense industrial base who are being laid off, perhaps as many as a million of them, if this cut goes through. A shocking, I think, act of moral turpitude, if not a violation of the law by the Obama administration, going back to the election.
Totally political. Yeah, the WARN Act requires 6 months of notice if there's going to be layoffs, and yet the Obama administration, to prevent a negative political fallout, told major defense contractors that they didn't have to follow the law. You know, last time I checked, there are laws that have to be followed. It's not an option what the president decides. I mean, this is an illegal activity by the president and the White House.
It sure seems that way to me, too, Bill. Unfortunately, it's not the only case in which he simply is ignoring the law. Bill, let's talk about nominations that are coming down the pike, perhaps even as we speak, with respect to key security policy positions. John Kerry is widely expected to be the nominee for the Secretary of State role, now occupied by Hillary Clinton, of course. You had a piece in your Inside the Ring column this week about a fellow by the name of John Caracal, who works for John Kerry, and some serious misgivings that's given the intelligence community about Secretary designate prospective Kerry's judgment. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is kind of a very typical Washington shot across the bow of the impending expected nomination, perhaps as soon as today, of John Kerry to be the next Secretary of State. What is little known is that Kerry hired this ex-CIA officer, John Caracal, on the staff of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and Caracal was described to me as a really bad actor. In October, he pled guilty to one count of violating the Agents Identities Protection Act, and that's basically just the tip of the iceberg, as they say, on this case. And he was involved in a plan by a number of civil liberties organizations to try to identify the CIA interrogators who questioned the Al-Qaeda terrorist currently incarcerated at the Guantanamo Bay prison. And so this was, he's often been characterized as just a persecuted whistleblower. This was putting CIA officers' lives in potential danger.
Yeah, this is scandalous. I trust that it will come up in the confirmation hearings with John Kerry, if in fact he is the nominee. Another nominee who is also engendering considerable controversy, of course, is Chuck Hagel, a former United States senator from Nebraska, seen by many as the president's favored choice for the replacement for Leon Panetta. What are you hearing about that nomination, Bill Gertz?
It's in trouble, and the evidence that it's in trouble is that the White House initially wanted to announce both Hagel for Defense Secretary and Kerry for Secretary of State at the same time, and the pressure has been building because Hagel is so controversial. His views on Israel, on Hezbollah, on Iran, on global zero nuclear cuts. Yeah, I mean, this would be an extraordinarily difficult confirmation process, and more voices in the Senate are beginning to say, wait a minute, we're not going to hold this up, but you should think very carefully about whether you want to risk a major Senate battle, because a number of senators have voiced concerns.
Yeah, and more by the day. Needless to say, we will be helping them raise hard questions about this guy, should he be, in fact, selected. One other senator featured prominently in your reporting this week, Bill Gertz, a dear friend of mine and of this program, and I think one of the greatest statesmen of our time, John Kyle. Give us a quick word on his farewell to the Senate.
Sure. Uh, he, John Kyle is leaving the Senate after 18 years. In my Inside the Ring column, we have an excellent piece looking at his views on national security. And he really hit a home run in identifying the whole concept of peace through strength, going back to Reagan, and making the point that weakness is provocative. It invites conflict. It invites war between states. And he went to bat for nuclear weapons modernization, which is an urgent need for our deterrent. He talked about missile defense. He talked about the Islamist threat. And he also talked about international efforts to impinge on American sovereignty, the notion of the UN trying to take control of the Internet and things like that. So this was really an excellent farewell address. He's going to be sorely missed in the Senate.
He certainly will. And by all of us, we can only hope that he will keep very much engaged in his post-Senate career in all of these fights, because he is a true leader. Bill Gertz, let me ask you this. Again, you are viewing all of this from your perspective at the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times, where you write, as you mentioned, the Inside the Ring column. You have a piece at the Washington Free Beacon that talks about the latest findings of a very important Blue Ribbon Commission on U.S.-China economic and security relations. Tell us what their latest conclusions are about China's nuclear programs and capabilities.
Yes, very interesting piece. This was a report that was done by the China Commission by a contractor, actually an intelligence contractor called Centra Technologies, and it points out that the long and close history of both nuclear weapons cooperation and missile cooperation between Beijing and Tehran. And it also gives some context for why that cooperation is underway. And this was the first time I've seen that in any kind of a government report, and that is that both the Chinese and the Iranians view their cooperation on weapons and security as an effort to undermine the United States. So it's clearly an anti-U.S. strategy on the part of both of these states to go after the United States and make the United States weaker, is, as they say in China, managing the U.S. decline while China rises.
And Bill Gertz, one of the interesting issues of the moment, especially against the backdrop of this global zero business and other efforts to disarm the United States, which we expect will feature prominently in the Obama administration's second term, is the question of how many nuclear weapons China actually has at this point. Do you have a read on that? Does the commission shed any light on that?
No, that's one of the areas that they've avoided looking at, because there's such a gap in the intelligence. However, the conference this week on the National Defense Authorization Act contains language that survived the House-Senate conference that will require the Pentagon to give its net assessment of Chinese nuclear forces in the annual report. This is a very major step, and it reflects this ongoing debate and controversy within U.S. intelligence circles over whether they have 300 warheads or, in fact, could have as many as 3,000 warheads, orders of magnitude larger.
We will be watching that closely, as I know you will be, from your perspective inside the ring, Bill Gertz, and at the Washington Free Beacon. Thank you for all of your contributions over 2012 with us. We look forward to working with you closely as we have this year in 2013. In the meantime, good holidays to you and yours. We'll talk with you on the other side, and we'll talk with the rest of you again next week. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.